My name is Ricardo Basurto Dávila. I'm a PE fellow, a prevention effectiveness fellow at the Influenza Division. Today I'm going to discuss some of the results of two studies we did in Maine during and after the 2009 PH1N1 pandemic. So the background, I think it's important to say that during the pandemic, Maine's early vaccination efforts for children focused very specifically on schools. There was a statewide school-based influenza vaccination program, and most vaccinations among children were actually conducted through this program in schools, or at least not all of them were done in schools, but were through the school vaccination program. Very little pediatric immunization in Maine occurred outside of schools. There was also, if you have seen some of the presentations that were given earlier this week, maybe you already know that Maine achieved a significantly high vaccination coverage among children. But also there was significant variation in coverage between the different schools. So this situation in Maine provided us an opportunity to evaluate vaccine effectiveness, both because I already described that we know that most children are vaccinated in schools, and records were kept on who were the children who were vaccinated, and also because of variation that allows for a nice study design. For example, the first vaccination clinics in Maine occurred in late October, and Maine actually got a late flu wave. So the peak of H1N1 circulation in Maine actually didn't happen until mid-November. A significant percentage of children had been vaccinated before the peak, which was not the case in many other states where children were being vaccinated at the same time as the peak or sometimes even after the peak circulation had already happened. The clinic dates varied across schools, so some schools vaccinated very early, late October, very early November, while some other schools vaccinated later in the year. So we do have a significant variation in some children who were not immune at the time of the peak circulation and others that had been immune for quite a while. Also, H1N1 circulation continued until early January, which also allowed us to have enough time after kids had been vaccinated where we were able to observe the infection rates after their vaccination dates. In addition to infection, protection of vaccine against infection, also, obviously, we would expect that if kids are not being infected, then they are not sick, they do not have to stay at home, and so we'll also expect vaccine to have some effect on student absenteeism. Because vaccination occurred in schools, we were able to know which kids were vaccinated, we actually had this opportunity to study the effect of vaccination on student absenteeism in these schools. So our objectives were to use various outcome measures to assess the effectiveness of single-dose 2009 H1N1 influenza vaccine among school-aged children. And by various outcome, basically we separate them in two groups. One of them is student absenteeism. We want to know how student absenteeism varies for vaccinated and non-vaccinated children. And the second is the traditional vaccine effectiveness definition, which is a reduction in infection rates. So our first study, the data that we used was on school absenteeism and vaccination among students. We partnered with the Maine Center for Disease Control, and we also partnered with the Maine Department of Education. So we requested administrative records from elementary and middle schools in four counties in Maine. We asked them for daily de-identified attendance records of all their students in grades K through 8 from October through December of 2009. We also asked them for the records on individual immunization, and using random identifiers, we were able to link the immunization records with the attendance records so that we knew for each student, we knew between October and December which days they were absent and which days they were present in school, and we also know exactly which day they had been vaccinated and which students were never vaccinated. In addition, we also requested a few other student and school-level characteristics that were present in their electronic systems. So we knew race and ethnicity, we knew gender, we knew age and grade. And for schools, we knew whether they were located in a rural community or a city, whether in which of these four counties they were located. We knew the percentage of students who were in on free or reduced price lunch. So we have some indicators of socioeconomic status. We have race and ethnicity indicators that allow us to control for many potential confounders when we're looking at the relationship between absenteeism and vaccination. In addition from the data that we collected from schools, we also asked for virus circulation data from the state laboratories. And we got not only data on the percentage of positive influenza tests, but also we got data on the percentage of positive tests for other respiratory viruses. And I'll explain in a minute why this is important. So to do their estimation of vaccine effectiveness against student absenteeism, we estimated survival models with repeated failures because it is possible that the child will be absent from school not only once, but you know, several other times. So we need to account for the possibility that we can observe repeated failures. And we have three definitions of a failure. The first definition is single-day absences, so it's basically every single time that a child was absent, we consider that a failure. Second definition was absences that lasted for three or more consecutive days. We expect influenza-related absences to be longer than a single day, so we thought this is probably a more accurate outcome, more associated with influenza infections. And we also used four or more consecutive days of absences as our definition of failure. So we defined vaccine effectiveness as the reduction in hazard or the risk of absenteeism for vaccinated students during the flu circulation period. And the last part is very important because unlike the traditional VE effectiveness, where we basically just expect a single number to indicate the percentage reduction in the risk of flu infection, when we are estimating the effectiveness of vaccine against absenteeism, it should only occur when there is flu circulating. So after flu stops circulating, we would not expect vaccine to have any effect in reducing absenteeism. So that was something important for us to consider. Our second study was a traditional study of influenza effectiveness against infection. And for this study, we conducted a household survey in only one of these four counties. And we interviewed the parents of K-8 students who had laboratory-confirmed H1N1 influenza. And for this, we were able to track down every single positive, well, almost all positive cases of influenza and match them to the records that we had from the schools. We used as controls the classmates of these students who had at least one absence during the period October through December of 2009. And we also used a separate set of controls, a random sample of classmates with no absences. And in this case, we were using absences as an indicator of whether to verify that there were no other kids who were not did not have laboratory-confirmed influenza, but who may have also been sick with flu. And we wanted a random sample of classmates with no absences because we wanted to verify if our assumption that if you have no absences, then you did not have influenza-like symptoms or, you know, that your parents actually say, well, he was not absent, but he was actually sick, and he had laboratory-confirmed flu. So we want to verify that. In our survey, in addition to knowing for each kid whether they had laboratory-confirmed flu or not, we also asked the parents to report whether they have had influenza-like illness symptoms at any time between October and December. And we also asked them if they had those symptoms, we asked them if they took them to the doctor and whether the doctor had actually given a clinical diagnosis of influenza. And we also collected information on other health conditions like asthma or diabetes. For all these kids, we had the same information as for the previous study, so we knew their vaccination information, we knew the demographic characteristics from the same data that I described already. So the estimation in this case, in this study is a case-controlled design, and we used three different case definitions. Our first definition was the confirmed cases, which are kids that we knew that they were positive, they had a positive test, RT-PCR test for H1N1 influenza. Then we had the probable cases, which were all those who had been confirmed, and for which the parents also reported that they had been clinically diagnosed with flu. And finally, we had the possible cases, which were all the cases who had been confirmed, the probable cases, and also those that the parents reported that they had ILI symptoms, even if there was no clinical diagnosis. As controls, we used the students in the same classroom as each of the cases, and who had no ILI symptoms as of the date of illness on site for the match case. We used a logistic regression, adjusting for some confounders, demographic confounders and health conditions. And we defined vaccine effectiveness, as is usually done, by 1 minus the adjusted odds ratio times 100%. So, results of the first study. We had a great response rate in terms of the schools. We invited 104 schools, and 93 of them agreed to participate. To do this, we tried to make it very simple for them. We created a document that explained the steps that they had to follow to get the data that we needed from their information systems, such that they wouldn't spend a lot of time trying to figure out how to do what we were requesting. We obtained vaccination and absenteeism information for more than 32,000 students, and because we have daily data for each of these students between October and December, we have over 2.2 million observations representing school day data for each of these 32,000 students. In fact, in this sense, we were lucky because originally we requested data only through December, but about half of the schools, because of the way their systems were designed, actually gave us data through March. And this turned out actually to be quite important for us. Average school level vaccination coverage was 55%, which was very high. And the range was from 18 to 83%. I believe median was about 57%, so we actually had something close to a normal distribution. And as you can see, we have significant variation in coverage for the schools. Also important, more than 30% of students had actually been vaccinated by the time the peak of influenza circulation arrived. And something that is also very important, we noticed that children who were eventually vaccinated, they always had a lower probability of being absent than children who were not vaccinated. This is important because this can be an important confounder. If we do not realize that and we just compare absenteeism rates between the vaccinated and non-vaccinated, we're going to be overstating our estimate of vaccine effectiveness. So let me show you a couple of graphs that hopefully will explain more clearly the data that we had. The dark bars in this plot show the percentage of positive tests for H1N1. And as you can see, even in October, there was already some flu activity. The peak happened around mid-November. And by January, there was very little flu, or actually pretty much no flu circulating in the state. The lighter bars show the percentage of positive non-flu tests. And this is important because if kids were sick with something else than flu, they also were likely to be absent. So we needed to have that information to make sure that we were not thinking, well, you know, they're still absent in January and there is no flu, so maybe our assumptions are actually not right. Also, the red line shows the percentage of vaccinated students. And as you can see, by mid-November, somewhere between 30 and 40% of children had been vaccinated, and vaccination started towards the last couple of weeks of October, actually, I believe the last week of October. Then this graph is essentially the same. I'm just adding the data that we had on absenteeism. And this is what I mentioned before. The green line shows absenteeism for kids who were eventually vaccinated. So these are the kids who, at the end of in our data, we show them as having been vaccinated at some point. The blue line shows the absenteeism rates for kids who were not vaccinated in our data, were never vaccinated in our data. As you can see, at any point in time, even later in the year when there was no flu circulating, the vaccinated kids had lower absenteeism. So what we really need to do is essentially try to find whether the distance between these two lines, the vertical distance between these two lines, actually grew during the time of flu circulation and for the kids who had been vaccinated. It's not exactly these two lines because we know exactly at each point in time which kids had been vaccinated, and that's why we want to make sure that the kids who had already been vaccinated and were immune had a lower rate of absenteeism, had a lower rate of absenteeism than non-vaccinated kids when compared to the periods when there was no flu. So these are our estimations of vaccine effectiveness against absenteeism, and like I said, we have three different outcomes. One of them is one-day absences, then we have 3 and 4-day absences. And the first column of results shows the estimated vaccine effectiveness with the actual observed flu circulation. And as you can see, the effectiveness, all of these estimates are significant, obviously, because of the large sample size that we had. As you can see, the more absences we're including as our outcome, the higher the estimate of vaccine effectiveness is. The 33% for 4-day absences is a little higher than the 33% for 3-day absences. But so if we look only at 1-day absences, which are less likely to be related to flu, then we only have a 20% estimate of reduction in absenteeism due to vaccination. But if we look at 3-day absences, then we estimate that vaccination reduced 33% of absences that lasted 3 or more days in all these schools. Then, like I also explained before, we expect that if there is more flu, then the effect will be larger. So we did a sort of a simulation, more like an adjusted prediction, assuming that for a full month, 50% of tests, of flu tests, were positive, which is essentially that was observed only during 1 week in 2009. And when we increase the percentage, you know, the percentage of flu positive tests, then our estimates of effectiveness go increase. And for example, for 4-day absences, we estimate that if there is that much flu for a full month, vaccinating would reduce almost half of 4-day absences, and more than 20% of 1-day absences. And remember, all these are all-cause absences. We do not know if they were due to being sick. So even the 4-day absences, then many of them are likely to be for other reasons. Maybe they just took a vacation. Then this is the data that we received for our case control study, where we looked at the effect of vaccination on the infection, influenza infection. And again, we have 3 definitions of a case. We have the confirmed, probable, and possible cases. We had, in this case, our sample sizes are much smaller. So we have 92 confirmed cases and 1,100 controls. Our response rates for these two groups were pretty high, 88% and 80%, which for a household survey is pretty impressive. And if you're interested, I can tell you a little more about the strategy we used here. We basically used school nurses. We asked them, we trained them, and we asked them to conduct the interviews. And because the parents knew them, we believe that that's what resulted in a much higher response rate than we usually observe in these household surveys. Also, you can see there are some differences in asthma rates between the confirmed and the cases and controls. So we believe it is important to adjust for these differences as a confounder. And as expected, we found the rates of vaccination were much higher among the controls than among the cases. Also, the illness, the length of illness, as we saw before, our assumption seems to be correct, that for cases, their illness lasted 70% of the time lasted, actually, for the confirmed cases, all of them, their illness lasted more than 3 days, 3 or more days. Then for the other groups, not quite, but still for most of these case definitions, illness lasted more than 3 days. These are estimates of vaccine effectiveness against influenza. And similar to the previous study, we found that the more specific, the more likely the outcome is related to flu, then the higher the estimate of vaccine effectiveness. Similar to Jim's results, we found an adjusted vaccine effectiveness of 69% against influenza infection. But if we use our other two case definitions, which are where we know that we probably have some cases that are actually not flu because they were not lab confirmed, then our estimates of vaccine effectiveness are much, much lower and not statistically significant. So we do have several limitations in these two studies. In the first study of vaccine effectiveness against absenteeism, even though we believe 3 or 4 consecutive day absences are more likely to be associated with flu, they're still not perfectly associated. We do not know if they were due to illness, so knowing whether a particular absence is due to the child being sick would have been much better, but we did not have that data. Also, we do not actually have a true baseline absenteeism because we do not observe absenteeism rates before there was any flu and before children were vaccinated. So we must assume that after there is no flu, and kids were already vaccinated, that we will observe similar absenteeism patterns to what happened before. We do not think this is a big problem, but it is still a limitation. And we do have some possibilities for confounding. For example, if there are other factors that affect both vaccination and absenteeism patterns during high flu, then our results might be biased. But at least the only situation that I have been able to think of is perhaps that during high flu circulation, the parents of vaccinated kids maybe also, you know, their parents who are more concerned about their kids, and that's why they vaccinate them, and maybe they also keep them at home just in case if they know that there's a lot of flu circulating out there. So if that is the case, then our estimates of vaccine effectiveness may actually be maybe underestimated. In our case control study, we have the usual limitations of a case control, that we have some potential for case misclassification, particularly if testing practices change in Maine, that the patterns of the testing for influenza changed over time. Also, we may have made some mild or asymptomatic cases. I should have here also the possibility that many of the kids that we have as controls have actually been sick before, just like Jim did. We have some potential biases. For example, if there is differential access or propensity to seek care for the cases or controls, and also the precision of parental recall, because we did conduct a survey with almost a six-month gap between the dates of the influenza circulation and the time that we asked these parents. Although we did use several ways to try to help them refresh their memory, using calendars and asking them about specific dates when the children were absent. But that's still a possibility. So in conclusion, we found that the PH1N1 vaccine was effective in preventing both student absences, particularly those of three or more days, and it was also effective in preventing laboratory-confirmed cases of H1N1 influenza. We did find that the effectiveness was lower or zero against other outcomes, and obviously our hypothesis is that this is because those outcomes were less likely to be associated to influenza as those that where we found a higher effectiveness. I'd like to acknowledge our collaborators from Maine CDC, Maine Department of Education, Arnold Monto from the University of Michigan, and several people at CDC. And also I didn't list the many school nurses that helped us conduct the survey. We had a large number of them, so they don't fit in this slide. That's it. Thank you.
So to get you all to the thing, let's have maybe a couple of questions, please.
Good question. I assume there were no policies about keeping kids out of school for a period of time if they were a confirmed case, because I know once a kid was confirmed or symptomatic in Connecticut, we had a policy that we tried to have the schools exclude them for a period of time. So I assume...
That's a good point, and I'm not really sure. Do you know, Suchira?
Whether or not your schools had a policy for excluding children who had a positive...
It was quite variable, but we did hear that several nurses were, like, pretty adamant, and if they saw that, you know, in 2014, there had been different students to school. So there was variability in how it
They did have a policy that the school nurses would stand at the door, and if they saw any child who seemed to have a fever or some symptoms, they would send them back home. So, in fact, our data includes those children. So we cannot tell which children were sent back home and which ones never showed up, but it includes them.
But that's how you account for the fact that none of the kids who were confirmed cases had less than 3 days of an absence.
That's a good point. Yeah, you're right. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I know you noted that differential rate of asthma in the cases versus controls.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it sounded like it was something you adjusted for later, but did you look at examining effectiveness separately for, say, non-asthma children and then children with asthma?
No, I'm not sure. We may have. I was a lot more involved in the first study than in the case control study, so I believe we did try. I don't think we had the numbers, yeah, to do that. But I can find out if you're interested.
Nice. Yeah.
I'm curious just about the different absenteeism after flu season,
mm-hmm,
among the vaccinated and the unvaccinated group, and what your hypothesis of why. I'm trying to think.
Sure. Yeah, this is a...
sort of caused that, and since you did household surveys in terms of looking at parental behavior, or again, what would have gone into that?
Sure. This is something that we also find in other studies. I believe that some people within our division call it the healthy vaccinee effect, which is that the people who get vaccinated are also likely to take better care of their health, and so they actually are often in better health than the people who never vaccinate. And that's why it's important to take that into account, because otherwise estimates of effectiveness may be overstated. In this case, my hypothesis, and this is something, I am a health economist, and this is something that we always worry about, selection. We believe that the parents of children who were vaccinated are parents who are perhaps more interested in their well-being, more responsible, that maybe the same parents who make sure that their kids make it to school and that they try to miss as fewer days of school as possible, the parents who decide not to take a vacation in the middle of the school year, are also the parents who made sure the kids get vaccinated, that remember to fill the consent form and send it with their kids to school. So that is our assumption, that the kids who end up being vaccinated are also kids that their parents maybe care more about their education, or in some other way they I don't like say care more about them, but in the sense that they make sure that those kids go to school. And so if we ignore that fact, that even regardless of flu circulation and regardless of vaccination, the kids who eventually get vaccinated usually have lower absenteeism rates than the kids who never are vaccinated, then if we don't account for that, then our estimates are going to be biased.
So it could be, if we're talking about school policies that exclude kids for symptoms, if the kids were vaccinated, the policy that
Yeah, that's true, because that's we don't know the reason of the absence. That is certainly a possibility.
Interesting.
I'm sort of not quite following, because it depends what else was circulating. I mean, if there was a lot of other sort of respiratory illness,
mm-hmm.
I would assume that a school nurse is not going to let them in at that point either. Because they're still, if you're still coughing and you still have
to cover. I think early on, I think that we were more proactive about insisting that the schools institute the policy if the kids were symptomatic than we were sort of later. And it may have been, not knowing what the school policy was,
mm-hmm.
it may have been the same thing in Maine. Because if they had said early on, because they didn't know what the kids had, and there was no vaccine available, that any kid that was symptomatic had potential of being infected and spread to other people, they had to
But I would assume the school nurses knew at least what we did in New York City, there was enough information, health information going out about the laboratory surveillance that I think people let down their guard, right? Once there was no flu circulating, I think there was a big concern. And I guess I can hypothesize actually the other way, that a parent who was more concerned about their child being sick might have sort of a lower threshold to keeping their kid home. Like they might be more likely to get them to get vaccinated and then worry about, a minor symptom, and keep them home rather than sort of sending them into school.
Yeah, that's true. And that's a potential bias. But if that were the case, then that would underestimate the effectiveness of the vaccine, because we will have more absences among the vaccinated who that are not related to illness.
Yeah, that's true. But were they better vaccinated or other markers and parents sort of took better care of the child, like in terms of completion of vaccination series or adherence to school requirements?
You know, on hindsight, that would have been something great for us to collect. We did not know before asking for the data that we were going to have that result. But you're right. I mean, it would be ideal to have some indicator that allows us to think, okay, well, these are the responsible parents, or given the and we can include that as a covariate in the models. But that's something we found until afterwards.
Okay, last question, then we'll stop.
We did have, as a control variable, the percentage of free and reduced price lunch, which is an indicator of socioeconomic status in a particular school. And we did find, as we probably would expect, that schools with lower socioeconomic status have higher absenteeism rates. We also found significant differences between by race and ethnicity on absenteeism and by rural and urban schools. Didn't report those results because they're not really related to the effectiveness of vaccination, but we certainly found that most of the confounders we thought could be relevant for to explain absenteeism were indeed statistically significant.